Yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show. Our job here is to bring you great information to help you think better about this great profession in dentistry. And are you thinking about getting an associate? Or are you an associate thinking about working with someone else? Well, today I bring on an old friend of mine, Bob Spiel, and we talk about how to fail hiring an associate and how not to do that. He walks us through a step-by-step process. I highly encourage you to listen to this because it's great stuff. So hope you guys enjoy it. We'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. Have you ever thought about hiring an associate? You're like, well, I've already done that. Or you failed hiring an associate. Or if you're wondering, how the heck do I even start this process? Well, today you're in for a treat. I got a good friend of mine, Bob Spiel, coming back, and he's going to give us some insight on how to fail or not fail hiring an associate and what to do about it. You know, Bob, thanks for being here, brother. Appreciate you.
Kurt, great to be with you. Thank you. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome to be here with my doppelganger.
That's true. Yeah. You and I have been mistaken for each other because we both have cool haircut, right?
We've got the best haircut around, man. Yes, indeed. Yeah,
You're way smarter than me. You're way smarter. You're better looking. I don't know how I could get mistaken for you.
You know, it's the same here. You've got a lot more. Your energy just lights up a city. You know, and I wish that I had that natural gift. I don't. But we should go on a roadshow sometime. You know, we could call ourselves, I don't know. Yeah, there are lots of things that we could call ourselves. But I think the shining lights or.
Dude, I think you're onto something.
You know, whatever. Someone else may call us the bum heads, but.
It's on.
Anyway, it's the best haircut around in COVID. It was fabulous.
It was fabulous. And so now yes. We've just brought it back to in style. So there's exactly. A lot of possibilities.
I know. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are in for a treat because I've known Bob for a long time and he's an awesome human being. We share a lot of the same values. And you're going to see today, if you're listening to the podcast, he's super sharp. And we talked about the idea of what to cover today. And this is a huge problem. Let's start with the big picture here, Bob. Associates. Now, I asked you this before we hit the go button. Like, give us some data, sure. Give us some perspective on how big this problem is in dentistry.
This problem's enormous, Kurt. I remember maybe 12 years ago, 13 years ago, what even launched this interest in me. And you and I both remember and love Linda Miles, okay, who was such a powerhouse within the industry for like 35 years. And we became good friends, just as I know you did. And, you know, Linda's just this idea factory. And one time we were having a phone call and she just kind of dropped this statistic saying, you know, Bob, 75% of the time, associateships fail in dentistry. And I've done a lot of hiring in my career. Dentistry is kind of like my pinnacle of my career because I've been in three other industries and have had 500, 400 people working for me at a time back in the 90s. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. 75% of the time? No way. And I just picked up my jaw and I said, Linda, why? How? And she said, nobody knows. It's just what happens. And what's ironic is that there are actually studies that we've been able to find out that verify this number. And you talk to some deans of dental schools and they say, we tell our people it's 90%. Mm-hmm. And so when I first heard that number, I thought, that's insane for one thing. It's also very profession threatening for another thing. Because as you and I both know, Kurt, when a practice gets really busy, that doctor has to make a decision about what to do next. And often that decision is, I need to replicate myself. I need to find another doctor who can come in here, take the lower lying stuff, you know, that's closer to the ground. I'll do the bigger stuff and we'll make sweet music together. And instead, what I found is so often that those relationships are entered into really poorly to start with. And then they just fall apart. And the hiring doctor, who's usually the practice owner, is back holding the bag. And this time, even in a worse situation, because the associate did get busy and they did, you know, continue to grow. And now it's right back at square one. And they're looking at themselves like, why did I do this? And what can I do next time that's going to make it different?
Yeah. Well, take us through steps. I mean, I could easily spend 15 minutes talking about the challenges of not getting the vision even right on this, because a lot of dentists that we meet, they're building facilities to accommodate this vision. And this vision is readily available in any podcast or any Facebook group or any video. It's all about hiring doctors so you can do less or build something bigger. And so that message is a strong one, don't you think?
Oh, it is. It's huge. Yeah. And where dentistry is going, I mean, I'm a firm believer that group practice is one of the waves of the future to be able to get more economies of scale. And also dentists, I would say that the majority of the younger dentists coming up really enjoyed the collegiality of dental school, for instance, and they want to be mentored. They want to work in a group setting. So yeah, the vision of it is really, really key. Figuring out then what to do with that vision and how to have it actually succeed is vital.
Yeah.
You know, so going off of our thought today, you know, first, how do you blow it in this? How do you actually make these mistakes? In other words, what do we see over and over again with why the 75% number has been out there for decades? And Kurt, this is what I find is, you know, like they're kind of two groups of dentists that are looking in this market space. You've either got those that are kind of, I'd say they're in their late 50s, they've succeeded. They know that they need to make a transition and they don't just want to sell. All right. They want to bring somebody in, mentor them. Or the other person who's probably about 20 years younger, has succeeded really well in his or her practice also, booming practice. And they've reached this point of saturation where they have very little time for themselves and they feel like they're, you know, the phrase on the treadmill all the time. And both of these doctor groups have a distinct need, and that is, how do I find somebody else to be able to help shoulder this load, who's going to be a fit, who's going to make money, and who's going to stay long term? But sadly, what they typically do is the exact opposite of what they should do. I mean, I've heard the phrase that dentists spend more time planning their vacation than they do actually figuring out how to hire their next associate. And I think a lot of that's true, okay? So, you know, the older one may end up hiring a firm, because there are lots of people in the space that do this, okay? But they hire a firm, but there's not a lot of vetting, all right? They're just getting the job ad out there, okay? They find a few candidates, they find one they really like, they like the resume, they've talked to them over the phone, they go to dinner, dinner goes well, there's a loose contract, and then he announces to his team the next day, oh, Dr. So-and-so is going to be joining us in a month. Then between the two of them, they're fighting for the schedule back and forth, and within 7 months, the associate leaves because he or she hasn't hit their numbers. They don't see a lot coming their way. There hasn't been any mentoring and things have just been really loosey-goosey. The other thing that happens is there is no contract, or they didn't even hire a firm to help them. They are just using their own resources to go find people, dentists that are out there, may network, may use social media to do it. They've got really unclear mentoring and communication, a lot of expectations that are unmet on both sides. And again, boom, the relationship ends. And
so,
the irony is that this happens often, not just once, not just twice, but for many of the clients that we have, they'll say, yeah, this is like my fourth associate.
Right.
What happened to the other three? Well, they didn't work out.
Well, and by the time you've had a fourth associate, this is a terrible analogy, but I had a dentist use it. It's like, by the time you've gone through three associates, when you announce that you're getting a fourth associate, it's almost like announcing you're getting married for a fourth time. It's like nobody's
a
gift, you know, or do we even attend, or do we even care to help with this because they just haven't seen it stick or work. And so they lose confidence in the future vision of this. And so
they do. Absolutely.
Where do I even start? Like, How do I even think about this so it doesn't fail? What would be the first step?
Okay, first step is this. Know, are you ready? All right, that's the first step. Are you ready for an associate? And there's certain metrics that we look at that indicate, are you or aren't you? One thing I'd invite your audience to do is just go to my team's website, which is dentistpartnerpros.com. We've got a white paper there called Gaining a Wingman, seven signs that you're ready for this. Because it's busyness, it's new patients, it's pure patient load, and it's your own desire in terms of, are you ready to continue to dial your career up? Okay. Because typically what happens, these kind of, if I can use shotgun associate relationships that aren't really well thought out, in the end, what they end up doing is they backfire on that doctor and that hiring doctor, and they end up feeling even worse than they ever did. So, A, no, are you ready to make this commitment and make this happen? And do you have the levels of busyness that are required to be able to move this person in? The phrase I kind of use, just sidebar, is this doctor so busy that on some days they practically want to throw up? All right?
Right.
Is that level of busyness to a point where you realize, you know what, I am just not effective in my role? And it starts to impact your life. It starts to impact your marriage, your kids, everything, because you're just running and running and running. So once you know that you're at this kind of point of saying, yes, okay, I want to make some changes. I've got to do something about this. And knowing that the old way never really worked. Mm-hmm. All right. So what's the new way to do it? Determine if you have a need. Once you say yes, then the next thing you've got to do is be really intentional about who is going to fit this need.
Yeah. So the first part, let me go back to the first one, because there's so many, that's a whole podcast in itself. Are you ready?
It is.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's not even go down the PPO road. I mean, if you're writing off 40% right now, I mean, and what's dangerous about PPOs and scaling model is a lot of dentists don't even know how much they're writing off or how many that they're participating. So I think you do need to know, you got to have some data. You also have to have some self-awareness. Let me ask you one question about, are you ready? And this is one of my favorite is that, and if you listen to the podcast, you've heard me mention this before. A lot of times the better you get, the harder you are to work with because you're picky. You like the way things look. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are some dentists I know that should never have anyone ever work with them because they just don't like anyone touching their stuff. Now that isn't everybody, but there are a few. I'm like, you don't even like other dentists. Like you don't even like some of the best dentists in the world. Like how can you even say you'd like to work with them? Oh, I love to mentor somebody else. I'm like, no, you don't like people, you know, like, or other.
Right.
I'm not saying that as a whole, but like, I think sometimes there's a big part of self-awareness and there's a big part of data and you got to put them together and you can't be emotional about them. You got to have somebody like you saying, hey, listen, here's who you are.
Right.
Is that a piece of the puzzle?
Absolutely. Yes. And there are times that we will turn around and tell somebody after we do this initial analysis for them and say, we don't think this is a fit. Right. There are other solutions that you've got to look at. Yeah, you know, you've got the combination of, are you personally the type that will work well with somebody else in your sandbox? Do you have the space in your practice to be able to bring them on board? All right. And is your busyness at a level where you know that there's enough that you can start to share with somebody else as you dial them up? Okay. I mean, typically, Kurt, we're looking at metrics like, do they have at least 18 to 1900? This is for a solo doc, by the way, 18 to 1900 active patients. And active means in the last 18 months, they've been in your office. All right. Are they producing at least, or well, collecting at least 1.6 to 1.7. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you've been in the industry long enough to know those are busy numbers for a solo doc. All right. And are they seeing at least 25 new patients a month? Okay, those are some just the basic metrics. And then what you mentioned, can you afford it? If you're writing 40% off and you know you've got to pay your associate 30% of what they're generating in collections, you've got some other things that got to be solved first because you'd be losing money on that person the whole time.
Now, I can't make this a 3-hour podcast because I know you have other time commitments. Okay. Let's say I make it through, checkpoint number one. I am ready. I do have 1900.
You're ready and you want it.
Take me to point number two. Where do I go next?
Okay. Where you go next, as I mentioned, is clarity.
Yeah.
And here's what we found is it doesn't take a lot of time. It's just like you brought up the word vision earlier, Kurt. What we're doing is we're envisioning who this person should be. I joke with the teams that we work with because we will go and interview the teams. All right, solicit their feedback. Who do you think this person should be? What should they be like? And I kind of joke and say, this is kind of like match.com for dentistry, but instead of tall, dark, and handsome, all right, we've got another set of criteria we're looking for. All right, what are they like? How long have they been in dentistry? How do they fit personality-wise with the practice? I mean, there's a whole list that we come up with. And why this matters is because here's the thing that I found in interviewing and selecting and hiring. Too often, we use all our gut and very little of our brain. And we got to reverse that whole thing. Right. All right. So if we're intentional about their characteristics, and we go as far as to break them down into what we call givens and wants. The givens are the absolutes that they have to nail these characteristics or they're not a good candidate. And what are the wants? They're, you can rank them based upon how important they are to each other, but be really intentional of who is going to fit here and solicit your team's input into this. Because that's one of the biggest mistakes doctors make is this idea that, I don't need to include my team. I don't want to let my team know. Okay, but who's going to help this doctor succeed the most? It's the team.
Your team.
So bring them in early. And it's not that they have the final say, but you want their opinions. You really want them to help create what we call this avatar of the ideal person. Because that then is what you use to be able to interview against, survey against, do reference checks against. And so it's using your brain. And then you allow your gut in the end to confirm if this is the right person or not, instead of using your gut and then your brain in the end tries to figure out how do we make this work?
Yeah. Because you usually don't go wrong on the dentistry part. It's the values that don't line up or the right.
It's
right.
That's correct. Yep. Sometimes the dentistry, it depends on how long they've been out, what school they've been to, but often that is not the biggest issue. It's values. It's how you handle money. It is how you communicate, and it's interpersonal style.
Yeah.
All right. We love the DISC system, for instance, which has been around dentistry for years. And so that's one of the tools that we use. We'll DISC survey all the leadership team. We'll DISC survey our candidates. What's fascinating is for some reason in love, opposites attract, but in business, opposites repel in the end. All right. You've got to be close enough, but not the same person.
Right.
Okay. To be able to actually have a good fit.
Yeah.
But if you're exact opposites of each other, typically the relationship will fail just because by showing up, you both bug each other.
Okay. Let me throw two more things at you.
Yes, please.
Maybe three more things. The pool isn't huge. Well, talk about the size of the pool, because the pool, from my understanding and what I hear, is like it isn't huge. Like you don't put it out there and then you get 30 people that you're going to meet with and you get to choose one of 30. The second piece is you as a dentist, whether you fit the late, 50s person or the person who's 20 years younger, you got a good idea of how you want to go ahead with this, because I'm using a cliche here. So if you're listening, don't get mad. There are a lot of doctors that want to take the really great stuff and then just leave the garbage for the associate.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's a vision thing. And then the third thing that we run into, and I'd love for you to dispel this or decode this, is like, there are some dentists I meet and they're like, nah, I just want somebody who just wants to work a few days and isn't interested in ownership. And then they call me 6 months later and they're like, well, they're looking at Facebook all day. They're just showing up for a paycheck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other side of it, I'm making this really complex for you, is like, I went into it like looking for a partner, and this kid's like really driven and is bugging me every day about when they can have equity, and I'm like, well, that's what you asked for. And now you're not ready to give it to him? Like, okay, Joe, what do I do with all that?
Okay, let me unpack that. I'm going to go in reverse order. All right. Let's first talk about equity.
Right.
Huge believer that if you want this associate to buy in and work, that you've got to have that opportunity down the road.
Right.
All right. But it's really clear in the contract what that time frame looks like, how the practice is going to be valued when that does happen. By the way, we recommend that you value it at the time they join and the time they buy in, and you split the difference. But you also make it really clear, in order to reach that kind of golden carrot, this is what you need to be able to perform in terms of production, but also in terms of the type of dentistry you do, but also how you help with the management. Again, clarity. And that's one of the biggest, if there's a word behind this, why we fail, it's because it's unclear. Why do we succeed? When do we succeed? It's because it's clear. It's clear to everybody. All right. So that's the first piece about equity. Make it clear. Make it the pathway very understandable, and then provide feedback to this dentist to know how he or she is doing towards that. Okay.
Love it.
All right. Trying to reverse order now. Your next point was.
Yeah. You choosing which kind of dentistry you're going to do and the associate's going to do.
Okay. So we'll go good point. Forward. Good point. Yes. For a little bit that can happen, but not in the end.
Yeah.
It's about creating synergy and not being afraid that, oh man, I've got this other doctor who's coming in and they're going to start to compete against me. That's not the goal. You want them to be able to be at your skill level, because you can actually then grow your skill level even more clinically. So it can't be this thought that I'm just going to feed them, as you say, this isn't meant to be offensive, but feed them the junk, feed them the lower lying stuff, because nobody's going to want to stick around to do that. And if they do, it's the wrong person.
Right. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's got to be some type of, I think when you bring anybody in your practice, it's got to be about us, you know, mm-hmm. like it can it never just be me versus you type of a thing. Long term.
Those relationships will fall apart. That's a complete given. Okay.
Yeah.
Now we do love to teach our clients, for instance, at Dentist Partner Pros, to be really clear again about mentoring.
Right.
And have a very clear path of how you onboard, how you mentor, how you provide feedback back and forth between both. Share in CE, love to have a 50-50 agreement up to $5,000 a year to invest in this new associate CE. They kick a dollar in, you kick a dollar in, for instance.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then reverse engineering all the stuff that I sent you, like the pool. Talk about the size of the pool. If I'm a dentist,
about
listening,
the pool?
Like, am I going to get 30 people to talk to? Am I going to be looking at three? Like, what's obviously it depends.
It depends. And here's the big, it depends. It depends if you're in a rural setting or if you're in more of a metro setting. In a metro setting, you'll be able to get a lot of candidates. Now, whether or not they're the quality that you're looking for, but in most metro settings, I would say that you can probably generate 20 candidate leads. In a rural setting, you're going to be fortunate if you have 3, 4, or 5. And the more rural the setting, honestly, the tougher it is. Now, that's something that we specialize in. We use a lot of AI to be able to do both headhunting as well as job posting across 500 different job boards. So we've kind of gained a niche in that area, but that's a rule of thumb.
Yeah. So that's
if you're in a metro
know.
Area, like a client that we've got in Boston that we started working with just the beginning of March or no beginning. Yeah. Beginning of March, you know, within 3 or 4 weeks, we had probably 12 candidates.
Yeah.
Ready. Okay.
Yeah. And then go back.
They're out there. Okay. They really are out there.
Right.
But we found, for instance, Indeed is not as good as it used to be. I don't know what happened to their business model, but there are lots of places to be able to post. Facebook is another place to post. But yeah.
I would completely agree. Indeed is becoming less and less effective for almost everybody we know.
Yeah.
And I joke, but this isn't a joke. I mean, even we still use it sparingly. And I swear, and I've heard people talk about this, you can actually copy the Indeed ad and put it right into ChatGPT and say, write me the perfect resume for this ad. And you can read it and go, wow, that's really good. Let's hire this person based on the, you know, the response that came back. So I do think you've got to think a little bit differently or a lot differently in order to find this person. So, I mean, if you're a metro area, you can afford to be a little bit more patient. In a rural area, you have to deal with the expectations that come with that.
You do.
And so that's really,
rural
really
area could take up to a year. Metro area, you can probably find that person in 90 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You use the word onboarding. So that's probably the third piece of the puzzle here. That's one everybody skips over. There's no onboarding. There's just waterboarding in dentistry. So how do I even approach the onboard? Okay. So let's say I've made it through checkpoint number one. I made it through checkpoint number two. Now, what does that mean?
Okay. Onboarding means number one. And it actually starts before they're even there inside the practice. And that is that you arrive at a contract that is a win-win between both of you. Once again, clarity. All right. Make sure this contract is well written. It doesn't have to be more than 8 pages long. It's got everything you need, but it's clear. And it works for both parties. After that, then to onboard, you actually have to begin the process even before they show up. Have a really well written bio. Have a great way to alert your patients that you're excited about this and this brand new associate dentist. And one of the greatest things I learned from Linda Miles years ago was never use the phrase associate dentist.
Mm.
All right. They're called a handpicked clinical partner.
Ooh, I like that. Thank you, Linda.
Isn't that sexy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you know what happens? Well, we've got this new associate. Boom, you've got a pecking order already in place.
Right.
I don't want to go there. Okay. So you have a bio, you have a way to advertise, you alert all your patients about them, you're excited, it's well written. And then the day that they arrive, you've got a clear plan of how you're going to have them shadow. All right, some clients of mine have actually had them assist the senior doctor for a month, which I thought was fascinating. Others have them shadow for a week, but again, clarity, be really clear what it is you want them to do first and foremost. And then you have a plan to get them busy. All right. And the busyness will come from limited exams, select new patients, select patients out of hygiene, and production that's being referred by the senior doctor to the new doctor. That's how you start. That's not how you end, but that's how you start. That's priming the pump.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And have one of your most senior assistants work with them. You may not be able to have that senior assistant there all the time, but by golly, you want their senior assistant there part of the time. And why? Because who's going to be the best judge of their clinical skills? It's going to be that senior assistant. 100%. And who's also going to help them learn more if they haven't been in the industry very long, that senior assistant can really mentor them.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I don't mean to throw... You know,
that's okay.
Curveballs at you, but this stuff happens. I think one of the things that the envelope around this that you have to be aware of is obviously the compensation system. So I love what you said, clarity, and then having it really well outlined. But let's say I'm a dentist. I get through checkpoint one, checkpoint two. Mm-hmm. Bob, I got it all written out, but I go through some really tough months where our production plummets. Do you know, I've got a pretty high personal, you know, financial need. If I'm in my 50s, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I still got kids in college. And now I've got to meet the financial obligations that I laid out there for an associate. So I guess what I'm trying to say is get my brain around what's the onboarding, you know, mentality I should have as the owner dentist. I don't even know if I should use that term around compensation. I mean, is it an 18-month runway before we start to get into we're good? I mean, should I be prepared for some ups and downs? Help me prepare, think better about that.
Sure. Well, okay. First thing is that in the contract, there should be a time where there's a minimum guarantee. Right. That allows the associate dentist to be able to relax and breathe while things are dialing up. For the owner dentist, that also lets them set a budget number that they know that they've got to be able to hit. Then the next thing is, after that, we usually recommend, and I'll make a comment about this in a minute, we recommend that minimum last 3-6 months, in some markets 12. But honestly, if you've hired, Kurt, the right person, within about 2 or 3 months, they've already stepped outside of the minimum guarantee, and they're outperforming that. And the normal amount that you find in private practice today is about 30% of either adjusted production or collections. Now, what's fascinating is to see that the DSOs are actually paying close to 25%.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a big delta between the two. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then thinking about this whole equity side of things, we also love to recommend that after about a 12-month period of time, that if this is geared towards having this owner buy, this new doctor buy in, you've got another 5% quote-unquote escrow agreement or escrow account where they have added collections that are going into that pool, which will go towards their buy-in.
Yeah. That's right? Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if the new doctor leaves, that goes right back to the senior doctor.
Yeah.
If the new doctor stays, it still goes to the senior doctor, but this time as cash.
Yeah.
And it just helps create this. It's a mental hook for one thing, and an emotional hook, but it also helps kind of establish balance between the two of them in terms of where they're going and why.
Yeah. Love that.
Okay.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I wish
so
I had another
onboarding,
hour.
You know, I do too. I know,
yeah.
You know, onboarding, if I can just add this last piece in here. Okay. And that is it. You can have a great bio. You can alert all your patients about it. You can get your front desk to get them busy. And by the way, you use the schedule to get them busy. You don't force patients to see Dr. New. You say, you know, Dr. Wonderful, his next opening is in 6 weeks, but his new clinical partner has an opening next week. Which would you like?
Love.
And if the front desk believes in this doctor, they can do that authentically, right?
Right.
Okay. But in addition to that, we found it's also really important to have a time for feedback. So to not just informal, because there's going to be these often discussions day long, you know, all day long about this patient, that patient. Actually have a time to sit down and talk about how are things going? What's working well for you? What's working well for me? What's not working well for you? What's not working well for me? And that gets scary, Kurt.
Yeah.
All right. You know, most dentists do not like to have those type of conversations. And we found that it's really helpful sometimes to have a third party involved in that.
Yeah.
We call them marriage counselor calls. But that last piece is really important to keep things moving forward.
Yeah. I have found that if you don't have those conversations, they are still having them, but they're having them with other people. So
exactly.
About how
That's
happy
right.
they are. So you want to you want to make sure that you're the primary conversationer, you know,
exactly.
That person. So
That's right.
Gosh, Bob, you just opened up a whole bunch of can of worms. And I know I can't keep you all day, but I want to do this. I want you to talk about how people can find out more, but let's put a final bow on this. Let's just for this particular podcast, give us some final thoughts.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Final thought is this. I'm going to go back in time, conversation with Linda Miles, 75% failure rate, going like, what the heck? How can that be? All right. And then working through this kind of process, way of viewing this whole thing from beginning to end and saying, okay, what can we do to make sure these relationships work? And here's the thing, Kurt, that I've found that using this process successfully has an 85 to 90% success rate. So you can flip this, all right? But it has to be done with a tremendous amount of clarity. And often when you're busy, that clarity is tough to find. You know, what we found is it actually takes about, if you're going to do this right, about 100 hours of time to pull it off. By the time you've interviewed, looked at resumes, come up with a list and all those different things. And so my company and my team, dentistpartnerpros.com, we have a white glove service where we do it all from beginning to end for busy dentists who realize, you know what, if I get this person and I nail this relationship, this is going to be one of the best investments that I've ever made in my practice. And in the end, it is, because we've seen these associates just take off and soar. And the coolest thing is for that owner dentist, it allows them to lower their shoulders, have less burden on themselves. They finally fall back in love with their profession and they continue to see the practice grow. And that's our biggest reward, you know? And I know why you're in dentistry is because you love to see dentists' light bulbs go off and have them find new and different ways of doing things to actually decrease their stress and love their life. And that's what this, that's our reward too, is we really love to be able to see that happen time in and time out. So how do they get in touch with us? Best way to be to go to our website. We've got a contact us link right there, or download our Gaining a Wingman report, and that will also ask for your information. Or they can simply do this, just email me. All right. Or better yet, I'm going to have them email my business partner because he's the guy that's over, you know, these initial contacts. But it's Brighton, B as in boy, R-Y, T as in Tom, O-N as in Nancy, Brighton at dentistpartnerpros.com.
Awesome. Awesome, okay. Buddy.
And we'd love to talk to anybody that listens to this. If they mention that they heard you, heard us on the podcast, we'd be happy to give the first 10 practices that get reach out to us a free complimentary analysis if they think they're ready.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Bob, you're the best. And stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening. And everything Bob and I have talked about, if you're not taking notes, this is how this works. Go down to the notes in the podcast, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify. Doesn't matter where you're listening. Flip up to the notes. You're going to see links to everything that Bob mentioned. You're also going to see all of the items that we talked about, and you can review afterwards if you happen to be driving or cleaning the garage or whatever while you're listening to this podcast. So just flip up to the notes, click on those, follow that right to where Bob's at, and he will take you through the rest of the process. Well, thanks for being on, brother. I really appreciate you.
Hey, thank you. This was awesome.
Awesome. And thank you guys for listening. If you enjoyed today, just do us a favor. Hit the share button. Share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things you guys want to see. You're going to see I'm lining them up. We've got an incredible lineup for the next couple months. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching. Keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.